At the Pentagon, Feith found himself drawn into the Chinese conundrum. The Bush administration sought to mount pressure on Sudan's president, Omar Bashir, whose militias were responsible for a humanitarian crisis in Darfur, a separatist-minded province. Sudan financed itself with oil production and sent more than half of its oil output to China. The Bush administration wanted to persuade China to pull back from its Sudan contracts. Feith concluded that talking about a mercantile versus a free market model of global oil in his bilateral military channel might advance the cause. He commissioned a free market economist, Benjamin Zeiker, to create a presentation entitled Historical Lessons from the World Oil Market for a visiting Chinese delegation. Essentially, it was a 19-slide PowerPoint presentation summarizing what Feith believed he had learned from his days in oil policy research and in the Reagan administration. The slides showed that U.S. government forecasts about oil's future availability had always been much too pessimistic. In 1980, the U.S. Energy Information Administration projected that there were only 28 years worth of proved oil reserves in the world remaining. 2 decades later, the EIA projected that there were still 37 more years remaining. China did not need to lock up supplies with rogue countries like Sudan, damaging China's global reputation, Feith told the defense delegation, because there would almost always be oil available. Moreover, China had no reason to fear a supply disruption carried out for political reasons. The embargo threat is empty, one of Feith's slides declared, because any attempt to cut off oil to a particular country would be overtaken by ordinary reselling elsewhere in the market, just as the United States had experienced after the Iranian Revolution. As an additional source of reassurance, the United States had urged China to build its own strategic petroleum reserve, so the Chinese Communist government would have at least short-term supply security, and therefore even less reason to feel anxious about the theoretical possibility of a future embargo. In a slide headlined, Current Chinese Activities in the World Oil Market, the presentation noted, It is clear that China views dependence on foreign oil unfavorably. Past mistakes by the United States after the 1970s, however, offer lessons for China today. The principal lesson, according to Feith, was this. Dependence on foreign oil does not create vulnerability. His visitors from Beijing were not persuaded. China did not break its oil ties with Sudan. To the contrary, it was clear that China's leadership did believe that its dependence on foreign oil created strategic vulnerability, among other reasons, because oil might be a weapon in prospective competition with the United States during the 21st century. The American-led invasion of Iraq, which Feith had also helped to author, hardened the fears of Beijing's risk players. They were very concerned when we went into Iraq, said Aaron Friedberg, a China scholar at Princeton University, who served from 2003 to 2005 as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Cheney. Right-wing Chinese outside the government said of the United States as the invasion unfolded, They're putting their hands on the windpipe. They're occupying a major oil-producing country, solidifying their grip on our supply lines. Friedberg did not think the predominant view inside the Chinese Politburo was quite so alarmist, but he and other Bush administration analysts could see that some patterns of China's overseas oil purchasing reflected its leaders' anxiety about the vulnerability of oil transport routes in the future, particularly on the seas. The United States Navy ruled the world's oceans and kept the seas open for all commerce to support free trade. As a rapidly rising global power, however, did China really want to build an industrial economy dependent on oil supplies shipped from abroad that were vulnerable to interdiction by the U.S. Navy? In the event of a confrontation with the United States over Taiwan, for example, might not the United States use its naval superiority as a lever, threatening to cripple China's economy by blockading oil supplies? China could construct its own Blue Water Navy to challenge the United States, but that would take many years, entail great expense, and risk a draining competition with Washington. Some American analysts, during the first Bush term, asked why China could not just content itself to free ride on the fact that the U.S. Navy is the only game in town, as Friedberg put it, That is, China could enjoy the economic benefits of secure ocean transport and allow American taxpayers to bear the price. But it was also obvious why this would not necessarily be appealing to the Chinese, looking to their future rise. Think how we would feel if the situation were reversed. One alternative for the Chinese leadership was to maximize its access to oil and gas supplies that could be transported by land. This insight seemed to explain a thrust of Chinese foreign policy after 2000. There was some thinking among Chinese scholars and strategists that land-based empires seemed to last longer than those that were dependent upon the seas. The potential for land-only routes attracted Chinese strategists to Russian oil supplies. They would like to stick a straw in Russia, was the way Friedberg put it, as well as to neighboring Southeast Asia, where China sponsored overland pipeline construction into Burma and Thailand. At least some strategists in the Bush administration did think of China's dependency on seaborne oil imports as a source of potential vulnerability in the 21st century, just as right-wing Chinese analysts feared. In war game scenario planning involving flashpoints such as Taiwan, U.S. military planners did not always think a coercive oil blockade against China would be wise or necessary, but they were content to see the Chinese anxious about it because it might act as a deterrent, said one Bush administration official. Vice President Cheney seemed particularly interested in China's vulnerability to U.S. naval power. His experience of the global oil market while running Halliburton had left him with a deep understanding of oil's fungible nature. But his thinking about national security was influenced, too, by historical narratives about the rise and fall of great powers, and particularly the history of control of the seas, which had been critical to Great Britain and the United States in succession as a means to ensure the physical supply of commodities necessary for industrialization, including oil. Cheney read and admired The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, the 2001 book by the University of Chicago's John Mearsheimer. Mearsheimer predicted that the competition over security among world powers, which had produced during the 20th century the 9 million dead in World War I, the 50 million dead in World War II, the violence of the Cold War's proxy wars, would extend into the 21st century, because the great powers that shape the international system fear each other and compete for power as a result. The book's final chapter, entitled Great Power Politics in the 21st Century, reviewed the prospects for military and economic competition between the United States and China, including the potential of the U.S. Navy to squeeze China's oil supplies by controlling the straits around the Persian Gulf. In all, Mearsheimer's book was deeply pessimistic, a far cry from the free market optimism of Douglas Fife. Cheney told colleagues that he liked the book until he reached the last chapter, where he thought Mearsheimer was a little too soft-headed and hopeful that the great power struggles that inevitably lay ahead might be contained and managed so that they produced limited disruptions and damage.